Whitney, it's Bill Thompson in Cincinnati.
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
Hey, it's going well. And you?
I'm doing very well. Just relaxing at home.
You have a few days before you hit the road for a couple months.
Yeah. We're keeping pretty busy between now and when we leave, just with stuff around Austin. But yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of time at home before hitting the road for so long.
Right.
So, yeah, it's really nice.
And the record comes out next Friday?
Yeah, 1 week from today.
And so that's exciting as well. Now, we talked last year about this time, and since then, you've put out the EP and this. That's 13 new songs that you've written. Are all those new, or some of them from your notebook over the years, or why so soon? Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. They're all fairly new, and I've been writing so much since I moved to Austin, and so I had to actually axe quite a few songs. To be honest, I have enough material to release another album if we see fit. I chose the tunes that I thought were right for each project respectively.
Well, each project respectively are both wonderful, and to put out that much in that short a time is pretty impressive, I would think. Although, again, from the sounds of the new one, there's plenty of material out there, both personally and societally, I guess.
yes.
I talked to Steve Earle recently, and he said that the best music coming out of Nashville, but this obviously pertains to Austin as well, these days is being written by women. You face this frustration of being female in the industry head on, and then there's the state of the world as well. Is that enough to do it? I mean, can you get those feelings out through the songs and then be okay?
I mean, it certainly helps, but I mean, it's not a...
Okay, it's not, relative, it's not
like,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not like taking a pill that just fixes everything, you know?
Right.
You write this song, and then you record the song, and you put this song out, and then, you know, immediately everything's better. I wish it was like that, but...
Right.
It's, you know, basically just offering up a way to cope and... get through things.
Yeah, things are not. It's amazing. I read the thing in the press release for the record about how you started on January 20th. Interesting day to start recording or start to do anything other than pull the sheets up over your head. At least for me. You know, like you say, the song kind of changed course in the middle of recording, you said.
Well, yeah, we recorded the vocals for Can't Stop Shakin' on Inauguration Day, but to be completely honest, that song, it was never supposed to be on the album, and it really wasn't even a song. Sometimes, not all the time, I suffer from performance anxiety. You know, if I'm playing a bigger show, I get really anxious, and the way that my body reacts to that is I tremble and I shake. And so I started just doing this little ritual thing, just kind of dancing around my dressing room like an idiot, and I would just sing that line over and over, like, can't stop shaking. And you know, I'd basically, to be completely honest, yeah, just dance like an idiot, and it made me feel better and it calmed me down. And I was telling my producer Raul about this, and he said, well, like, dude, that's a song. You need to write that whole song. This isn't just a little ritual. And I said, okay, well, give me a couple of days. He said, no, you have 20 minutes.
Mm.
And so, yeah. And so, I basically just thought, you know, I basically listed off, some things that make me feel anxious, and the song wrote itself in, you know, probably under 20 minutes.
Isn't that the way things go sometimes when you just kind of turn your attention to them and figure them out. I mean, you know, inspiration obviously can come any place at that point.
Oh, absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So you were scheduled to play here last March. You were going to play the same room you played last year upstairs. And then they snagged Marty to play downstairs. And whoever's idea was for you to open for them was genius. And I'll never forget after the first song, you said, and then they told me that I'm going to open for him, and I'm like, holy shit. And that was so great because I think it broke the ice for everybody. It puts you in front of obviously a much bigger crowd, larger number of people than you would have had upstairs, and you charmed them all. So the saying, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity, you were set. You shouldn't, you know, I don't know if you had performance anxiety that night or if you were singing shaking, but when did you find out that that had been changed?
Well, what happened was I saw on the, it was either me or my manager, I can't remember, but I saw on the website that Marty was going to be playing downstairs, and at that point, in the big room, and at that point I had never met Marty, but I know his bass player and I know his guitar player very well. They had worked on Rule 62 with me, and that was the last time that I had seen them. And so basically we contacted the venue and, you know, basically said, you know, we're friends, but not only that, like, what we do is kind of in the same vein. And I had even seen like some tweets and stuff, like, I don't know what to do because Whitney Rose is upstairs and Marty Stewart's
downstairs. One of them may have been mine.
Okay, maybe, yeah. Well, thanks for that. we contacted the venue, then the venue contacted Marty's team and kind of explained the whole story, and it happened really quickly. When we found out that both shows were going to be happening simultaneously, and I was so excited.
It was great.
I love Marty Stewart. He's something else.
And so had you known Vaughn and Scruggs before you went to the studio, or did Raul bring them in, or how did that how did those relationships develop?
Well, I had met them around Nashville, and then it was Raul who called them in. Or actually, I think he called in Kenny, and I called in Chris.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's how it happened. It was so much happened in a week. It's hard to remember and like get all of my facts completely straight.
That's okay. You don't need to.
I honestly can't remember exactly how I met them. It's just having so many mutual friends around Nashville, and I've been spending more and more time in Nashville, and we had definitely hung out a few times before I called them into the studio. I just don't ask me where.
That's okay. I won't do that. But it's interesting because, again, I'll harken back a little bit to last year. I think you had recently, I'm not sure exactly when you arrived in Austin, but it strikes me as it was last year or sometime, you know, certainly not more than a couple years before then.
And yeah, it was 2015, so
2015.
I've been here for...
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're talking 16, so you'd been there for about a year or so at that point.
Right.
And you had said, or we talked about the fact that, okay, I need to make a decision, you know, I think I could be comfortable in Nashville or I could be comfortable in Austin, and I forget exactly what, you know, the reason was for choosing Austin. And obviously it's worked out, but it's great to feel comfortable in Nashville too. You recorded this one there.
That's right. Yeah.
And because did you choose to do that? Did Raul?
He chose the studio.
Okay.
But I knew that I wanted to make my next full length in Nashville.
Okay.
And I had talked about that with my record label as soon as I signed with them, and they were totally on board. For me, it was just kind of, I mean, it was you know, it was practical because most of the musicians who I wanted to use reside in Nashville.
Gotcha.
So there was that part of it, but there was also, you know, it's the whole, it's the romanticism. You know, I've been a very big fan of music that, for the most part comes out of Nashville since I was a very, very little girl. And so, making an album in Nashville is, you know, it's just a very romantic notion, and it completely lived up to everything that I wanted it to be. And so I'm so glad that I did it there, and especially because I had made the EP here in Austin, you know, mm-hmm. with Austin guys, and yeah, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to feel comfortable in both cities. I mean, that's the thing, to, you know, fluidly move back and forth between groups of people. And, you know, and have groups of people in both cities.
Oh, absolutely. I probably have just as many friends in Nashville, if not more, than I do in Austin. But yeah, it's I'm very lucky.
Well, again, when luck is when opportunity, preparation meets opportunity. I'm going to work that in there someplace, because again, you have to be ready.
I like that.
It's not because you know, someone pulled you off of the, you know, the McDonald's drive-thru window and said, hey, you know, do you want to play here tonight? You have to be ready to do that.
Do you know what? I love that you're saying that, because it's actually a pet peeve of mine, and I can't even believe that I just said it about myself. I think it's more just like a thing that you say to express gratitude, you know. But it is a pet peeve of mine, you know, when, you know, something gets announced or like an opportunity comes up and, you know, it's shared on social media, and then you see comments like, oh, she's so lucky, and it really, really grinds my gears. Because it's like, well, no, like I didn't win a draw in order to get this opportunity. Like, I worked my ass off, and, you know, it has led to this, and for that I am grateful, but I'm not going to say that I'm lucky, and I'd appreciate it if you didn't either, because luck, you know, obviously luck is a player, but it's so much more than that, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm even hesitant to bring this up. Again, as the father of two daughters, I understand, you know, I understand the way of the world, as Isabel sings in the Nashville Sound and things like this, you know.
Such a good record.
Oh, isn't it something? And again, you have, no one has a bigger champion than him, and it's just, it makes my heart proud to see somebody that I like as much as, you know, doing those things. But, you know, again, visually, you're great. I love the, for the Better to Be My Baby video there. And so at some point, someone's going to say, well, she got an opportunity because she's really pretty, or this, that, or the other, in addition to, you know, all the other stuff. Do you even bother to respond to someone who would say something like that?
No, not at all.
Okay. So, I mean, that answers that question, and we don't need to talk about it anymore.
I would not waste my energy, you know, even like acknowledging any kind of comment like that. That's complete bullshit.
Yeah, it is. Now, I'm going to take it further, though. But again, the video is cool, and I think you can do that. It's, you know, I see the comments on things. It's Nancy Sinatra, and it's Dusty Springfield, and things like that. So sooner or later, someone's going to come to you and say, hey, you know, your country credentials are impeccable, but do you want to make a Memphis soul record, or do you want to make a more of a pop record, or things like that? Does that, have you heard that? Does it make sense? Is it, you know, or do you, my guess is that you think that good music is good music, and it doesn't need to fit into the specific genre.
Yeah, your guess is very right. You know, Every single record that I've made has been, there's absolutely nothing contrived about it. You know, I'm not trying to do anything. And if I did, you know, maybe I would see a little more commercial success. You know, if I was to make something that, you know, came off as being a a little more cohesive, because pretty much everything that I've put out so far has been a marriage of my two biggest influences, which are, you know, classic country and like 60s girl group esque type stuff.
Right.
You know, I have obviously the thought has entered my mind, like maybe I should at some point, like, kind of divorce the two and, you know, maybe make a record that's full on like country to me, and then or you know, full on pop, soul, rock kind of thing. Basically my favorite songs that I write are always just a marriage of those two things, and I'm not going to, you know, sacrifice what I think is better,
right,
just to make something that, you know, that would be easier for people to understand or easier for people to categorize, because I don't think that's important. I think I think that, you know, the need to put something in a box and the need to categorize is like a very big flaw in our society. And and I think that a lot gets sacrificed because of that. And so I doubt that I'll ever make, you know, a record that, you know, is contrived. I don't know if I don't know if you know what I mean, but
I do. I mean, it's like, you know, yeah. Okay, you know, you, someone would say, okay, she's going the Taylor Swift route or something, right, like that, you know, which, yeah, is a conscious decision, and God bless Taylor Swift for making that conscious decision and excelling in that field, and that's great.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's interesting to me over the past couple years of seeing, like, Isbell and like Sturgill, you know, you don't expect Sturgill Simpson to show up at a show with a horn section and just blow the roof off the dump. It can be done. It doesn't need to, you know, you don't have to stay, you don't have to color in the lines and do that. And so I think if you stick to your guns, you know, first of all, God bless you for doing that. And secondly, there's enough soul and 60s girls, you know, I think to me that expands that audience without sacrificing one audience for the other by, as you put it, trying to contrive something that may not work at all, and you lose both of them at that,
yeah,
point.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, like I have no idea what I'm going to do in the future,
sure,
but this might come back to haunt me at some point. I don't know.
As long as you keep writing good songs, it doesn't matter what you do in the future. I mean, you know, again, no matter what anybody says about this, that, or the other, it comes down to the song. And if the song is good, you know, then you'll find a way to present it that people will like. I mean, again, I'll be interested to see, and I know how hard it is. Jesus. And one of the problems about how hard it is the fact that there's so many good people out there right now. I mean, there's, you know.
Oh, totally. But it's so crazy because, you know, the internet is such... it's such a blessing and it's such a curse. I mean,
that's a fact.
It's a blessing because, you know, for artists like me, it's basically free advertising. You know, like, I don't have to go around every town that I'm playing and like put up posters. I can just do a post on Facebook. You know, I can do a tweet, and so that is incredible. And you know, like, I can't afford billboards, obviously, but I can afford a Facebook post, you know, because it's free. So it's amazing in that regard, but it is also such a curse for so many reasons. And a big one is they're all kind of big. Don't even get me started, like, on comments.
Well, here's a tip from somebody in the media business: don't read the comments. It is impossible to, you know, you can't win. And all it does is drive you crazy, you know.
You know, like, I'm a very unknown artist, and I see the meanest things written about me sometimes. Like, I can't imagine what it must be like for, like, someone who's actually successful and someone who's actually big. Like, the things that what they must see. It's incredible. But it's also, you can't have any secrets anymore. Like, you know, I went on Wikipedia the other day, and I didn't even know that I had a Wikipedia page, but someone made this Wikipedia page, and everything is there. They know so much about my life. I have no idea. I have no idea who made it. It's insane. But it can really come back to bite you in the ass, especially if you can't be dishonest anymore. Like, you know, so many people used to build careers on creating this fake person, and you know, then this, you know, the person is now just the artist, and their background story is completely fake. But nobody, you know, nobody gave a shit. But now, I don't know if you've been following, like, everything. Have you heard of the band Midland?
I have. And I just saw something today. I didn't read it beyond there. I'm not exactly sure what it is. Are they not real?
Well, I mean, I think what they did was they really exaggerated their past, because they claim to be an Austin band, and they, you know, they said things just like, oh, I put in my 10,000 hours, and like we did residencies around Austin, and so it really infuriated mostly just people, you know, in the Austin music scene. Like, I see, like, so many of my friends are, you know, going on Facebook and going on Twitter, and it's like, I can't believe these phonies, you know, blah blah blah, because, you know, they're signed with Big Machine, and they're, I think they're still out of Austin, but obviously Big Machine is out of Nashville, but they're becoming really successful really quickly, and that's for some reason infuriating people, because they had, you know, kind of embellished the story of their past. But people used to make careers out of that, and now you can't do it. And I mean, in the long run, it's going to be fine, because their music is really good, first of all.
Well, then that's okay, then. Yeah, I mean, you don't lie about it, but again, that's what it comes down to.
Exactly. And then the music is really good, and, you know, for the most part, like, they're, you know, they're getting a shit ton of commercial radio play, and
wow.
For the most part, people who are hearing their music, they could not care less what their background is, because it's just,
sure,
you know, it's good music, right. And you know, only music critics and, you know, indie artists like read, you know, like Saving Country Music. It's not like you have it's not like, you know, Saving Country Music, that website, it's not like it's Perez Hilton, you know, you don't have the masses aren't really they're
right.
Not really flocking there. I don't even know if Perez Hilton is still relevant. That was
I know either, but that's a great reference. So
I could think of, but anyway, it's just it's so crazy, and I think it's such a waste of time to, you know, to spend so much time arguing about
yes.
an artist's authenticity. It's so dumb. Anyway,
well, and when it's done,
people are getting their panties all in a bunch.
Yeah, is you know, again, the anonymity of on both sides of the internet is giving people, you know, music's way down the list. But you know, to just say, you know, the worst racist things or whatever in the world, because, you know, nobody's going to come along and beat the shit out of them if they, you know, if you ever said that to anybody like
yeah.
that, you know. So that's a comment, and again, you know, it's interesting that but again, that's because, you know what, I'm ready. I would, and as soon as I retire, I've retired a couple times, and then I get sucked back in because I love doing this. When I retire, I'm getting rid of my Facebook page and
yeah.
Twitter. But you can't, because like you say, it's a tool to help you, that you can reach people that you couldn't possibly reach in old media ways or whatever, you know. And so I guess you have to put up with the bad part of it with the good.
Yeah, and you know, and it's also, you know, I can make the decision every day. Like, I don't need to wake up and check Facebook. It's not, you know, it's not going to change my life.
Right.
And so, but it is addictive, and I'm definitely guilty. I'm definitely guilty of spending probably too much time on social media, and that is something that I really should focus on changing. But especially, you know, when you're you have a 10-hour drive to get to the next
exactly
day.
That's your problem, yeah. Is it how are you going to pass that time? And you can't. It's very hard, and I'm very sympathetic to that. So, well, thanks for taking 25 minutes. I had hoped to get you out of here before then, but it's always just wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
We look forward to seeing you here again. And the album's wonderful. I love it. And I can't wait to, you know, hopefully people will hear it. And hopefully people will read, whoever reads the newspaper anymore. But I'll put it on my social media. And, you know, dozens of people may respond to that. So rest up, travel safely, and we'll see you. I guess it's only about 3 weeks from now, though. So
yeah, I'll fly right by.
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
Thanks again, Whitney.
Thank you, Bill. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.